Imagine a financial transformation with something so profound it rivals the impact of AI. A shift in how we understand and use money, unseen since currency decoupled from gold decades ago. That's the sheer scale of change we're diving into today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission for you is simple: cut through the noise, get straight to the critical insights. We're embarking on a deep dive into banking 2.0 and the stablecoin revolution. We've pulled together some fascinating sources, the white paper Banking 2.0, the stablecoin banking revolution, recent legislative updates, big corporate announcements, fresh market data. We're going to extract the most important nuggets, give you a shortcut to truly understanding this paradigm shift and what it means for your financial future, all without getting overwhelmed. I'm genuinely curious about this topic because stablecoins, they're often misunderstood, but they seem to be quietly yet fundamentally reshaping global finance.
And that curiosity is perfectly placed because this deep dive is crucial. Understanding stablecoins isn't just about digging into crypto, it's about grasping the future of money itself and why that truly matters to you, the changes we're talking about today. They have profound implications for everyone, how you save, how you spend, even how global commerce and international transactions will work really in the very new future.
Okay, let's unpack this then. To really get where we're headed with Banking 2.0, we probably need that quick trip back in time. Understand where our money comes from. Before 1971, right, we had the gold standard. Currency value was directly backed by physical gold. You could theoretically swap your dollars for actual gold. That gave it this tangible, inherent stability, trust.
Tangible backing.
But that all changed pretty dramatically in 1971. The Bretton Woods collapse, the Nixon shock. That's when the U.S. dollar and basically most global currencies dropped the gold backing, ushering in our current era of trust-based monetary systems.
Yeah, and what's really insightful there is how that pivot led us to what is essentially the virtual reality of money today. Since 71, almost all major currencies became inherently virtual. Why? Because central banks adopted this policy of, well, unlimited monetary expansion, so there's stability. It's not based on gold anymore. It's based on the credibility of institutions, the economic performance of the country.
So it's built on faith in the system, basically.
Right, which raises that big question. If money can just be created with keystrokes, what gives it value? And the insight there is traditional savings kind of become a losing game by design. It forces people to look for other ways to store value, things not subject to, arbitrary expansion.
Interesting. Are there exceptions?
There are, and they're quite strategic. Countries like Switzerland, Singapore, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, they've kept substantial physical gold reserves. And intriguingly, they're increasingly looking at crypto reserves too. The UAE, for example, boosted its gold reserves by over 19% in just Q1 2025. And they facilitated over $300 billion in regional crypto transactions. That's not random. It's what our sources call a sophisticated hedging strategy against monetary instability.
Wow. So from gold to trust, that's quite the leap to wrap your head around. What are the biggest implications of that shift? How did it sort of create the need for something new, like stablecoins?
Well, that's the key question. When trust is the only backing, the system, while it mostly works, develops certain vulnerabilities. Our sources are clear. The current fiat system has some pretty significant cracks, and that's exactly why new solutions are popping up now.
Right. And the sources highlight this thing they call the inflation productivity imbalance crisis. Sounds a bit academic. Can you break down algorithmically inflated money supplies for us? What does that mean for, the average person? How does productivity tie in?
Absolutely. Think of it like this. Money's being created digitally, super fast, almost like clockwork, right? By a kind of algorithm. But the actual stuff the economy produces, goods, services, isn't growing nearly as fast, or maybe it's even shrinking. So you have more money chasing the same amount of stuff or less. That mismatch, it's a structural issue. It inevitably leads to your currency losing value over time. Your purchasing power goes down.
Ouch. So your money just buys less.
Exactly. And the U.S. is a pretty stark example, especially after 2008 and the whole COVID-19 response. Lots of money creation.
So that's one big crack, the value erosion. What other weaknesses do these centralized fiat systems have?
Well, beyond inflation, they're prone to volatility, fraud, political manipulation. The sources mention single points of failure, bureaucratic inefficiencies, and these rent-seeking intermediaries.
Rent-seeking intermediaries. What are those exactly?
Basically, middlemen who take a cut without really adding proportional value. They exploit the system's complexity, adding cost and friction. Think extra fees, delays. And within these often opaque systems, traditional financial crime, it can go undetected for months or years.
Okay, so these aren't just small glitches. They're like built-in problems weakening the whole structure.
Precisely. And our sources lay this out very clearly in what they call Table I. It compares banking 1.0, that's our current system, with banking 2.0, the stablecoin model. Banking 1.0, centralized, based on institutional trust. Key weaknesses: inflation, friction. Banking 2.0, decentralized blockchain, backed by diversified reserves, designed to tackle those weaknesses. Though, of course, it has its own new challenges, like keeping the peg stable and dealing with fragmented regulation.
That comparison really hits home. It shows stablecoins are aiming right at those structural issues. So given these problems, stablecoins emerge as the potential solution. Why them?
That's what the sources strongly suggest. And the key thing often missed is these aren't brand new. They're not some unproven tech that just appeared. They've actually been operational and subjected to rigorous real-world testing in open, decentralized environments for more than a decade. We're talking early versions like BitUSD, Nubits, back around 2014.
A decade. Okay, that's important. Testing in the wild, not just a lab.
Yeah.
What's really groundbreaking about that kind of testing?
Well, the insight is that this decade wasn't a gentle test drive. It was a brutal, global, adversarial stress test. Think about it. No other financial innovation has really faced that kind of constant real-world scrutiny from literally anyone, anywhere trying to break it. It proves more than just theory. It shows battle-hardened resilience. It's survived hacking attempts, market manipulation. It's an unprecedented stress test.
Right. Survived hostility, yeah. Not just existed. And the tech itself helps with that resilience.
Exactly. The blockchain's transparency is key. It allows for real-time monitoring. Suspicious patterns can be spotted, often revealing fraudulent activity within minutes. That's a world away from finding out about financial crime months later in the traditional system. And the ecosystem has evolved too. You've got fiat-pegged ones like USDC, USDT, algorithmic ones, asset-backed ones. Looking forward, there's this growing idea of digital currencies backed by the intrinsic worth of underlying infrastructure as a public commodity, or diversified reserves, metals, real estate, other cryptos.
Okay, so a resilient foundation built over a decade. Let's get into the concrete advantages then, this banking 2.0. First up, global transaction efficiency. The sources say stablecoins fundamentally reshape how transactions occur by unifying them under a single virtual pipeline. Help us picture that.
Sure. Think about sending money overseas now. Our sources have this figure too, which shows it. It's a mess, right?
Yeah.
Multiple banks, clearinghouses, intermediaries. Each step adds time, adds cost.
Yeah, it can take days and cost a fair bit.
Exactly. Now, figure three shows the stablecoin way. It's basically direct, peer-to-peer. It just cuts out all those middlemen and a result. Transactions settling in minutes rather than days and fees. Measured in cents rather than dollars or percentages. It's like going from, I don't know, carrier pigeons to email for money.
Minutes, not days. Cents, not dollars. That's not just better. That's fundamentally different. An order of magnitude shift. What about security, beyond just spotting fraud faster?
Well, the security architecture is fundamentally different, too. Blockchain secures things by distributing the ledger across thousands of nodes worldwide. Yeah. Attacking that is exponentially more difficult than attacking a single centralized database. We only need to think about things like the Equifax breach in 2017 or attacks on the SWIFT network. Centralized systems have single points of failure. Blockchain, ideally, doesn't.
Makes sense. Distributed defense.
Right. And stablecoins can also help with those bigger macroeconomic stability issues we talked about. They can potentially balance the inflation productivity equation better by offering a more stable store of value, something less prone to being inflated away. And you see advanced stuff emerging like Ripple's RUSD integrating with Chainlink's Oracle networks. Those are secure data feeds designed to boost liquidity and access in both DeFi and traditional finance.
And crucially, we're seeing this bridge being built to traditional finance, right? Like Kraken Bank in Wyoming, a special purpose depository institution, 100% reserves, doing crypto custody and fiat accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And JPMorgan Chase, quite a turnaround for them, looking at crypto-backed loans using Bitcoin and Ethereum as collateral,
mm-hmm.
potentially by 2026.
Yeah, and connecting all these dots, these advantages aren't just small tweaks. They represent an order of magnitude improvement. Mm-hmm. For you, the user, it means lower costs, faster money movement, maybe more security. For global business, it opens up huge efficiencies, potentially new business models. It really changes how value flows globally.
That does paint a very compelling picture. But, you know, some listeners might be thinking, okay, sounds great in theory. Are we really seeing this happen now, or is it still mostly talk?
Oh, it's definitely not just talk. We're seeing this transformation unfolding right now. There are landmark developments validating this whole shift to banking 2.0.
Okay, give us some examples. What are these big validation points?
Well, look at the U.S. On July 18th, 2025, President Donald Trump signed the Guiding and Establishing National Innovation for U.S. Stablecoins Act, the Genius Act, into law. This created the first comprehensive federal framework for U.S. dollar stablecoins. Crucially, it mandates 100% reserves in highly liquid assets, predominantly U.S. treasuries.
So, real regulation, clear rules. What was the impact?
According to the sources, the market impact was immediate and significant. They reported substantial inflows into crypto-related ETFs right after it passed. Regulatory clarity really seems to unlock capital.
Interesting. What else signals this move towards the mainstream?
There's also this strategic national asset management angle. The Trump administration is described as taking a revolutionary approach, setting up a sovereign wealth fund. And this fund could potentially hold Bitcoin and stablecoins as national reserves, aiming to reduce the national debt. They've also formed a crypto advisory council, reportedly including big names like Ripple's CEO. It shows a serious engagement with digital asset strategy at a national level.
Okay, national strategy, regulatory frameworks. What about things consumers might see or use?
That brings us straight to PayPal. Their crypto integration is pretty comprehensive now. They launched Pay with Crypto. Merchants can accept dozens of cryptocurrencies, and they get automatically converted into PayPal's own stablecoin, PYUSD.
And the benefit for merchants?
It's compelling. Transaction fees starting at just 0.99% for the first year. Compare that to typical international credit card fees. It's significantly lower. Plus, they get near instant access to the money, and they can earn a 4% yield on their PYUSD holdings. And PYUSD itself, it's grown fast, around $900 million market cap, making it the 12th largest stablecoin, according to our sources.
Right. So you have regulation like the Genius Act, strategic moves by governments, and major players like JP Morgan and PayPal getting deeply involved. The combined weight of that, it really does feel like it's shifting from if to how fast, doesn't it? How soon do you think these kinds of shifts might start impacting everyday digital transactions or investments for people listening?
Well, they're certainly laying a very solid foundation for mainstream use. The speed we're seeing suggests the way we all interact with money could evolve pretty rapidly from here.
Of course, no big revolution happens without bumps in the road. Our sources also highlight some pretty critical challenges and risks. What are the main hurdles we still need to navigate?
Yeah, absolutely. Table 2 in the source material lays these out. A big one is peg volatility. Remember USDC depegging briefly in March 2023? That was tied to its exposure when Silicon Valley Bank collapsed. It was a stark reminder about the risks of concentrated fiat-based reserves. It showed stablecoins could inherit risks from the traditional system if they're too closely linked.
That's a really important lesson learned, yeah.
What else? Then there's regulatory fragmentation. Okay, the U.S. has the Genius Act, but globally, the rules are still fragmented and inconsistent. That makes things tricky for issuers and users operating across borders. Technical vulnerabilities are always a concern, too. Potential bugs in smart contracts, issues with those Oracle data feeds, and the big one looming long-term, quantum computing.
But quantum computing, that sounds serious. Can you just briefly explain that threat in this context?
Sure. The fear is that future quantum computers could become powerful enough to break the encryption methods that currently protect blockchains. So it's a potential long-term threat to the fundamental security of these networks. And finally, there's market manipulation and systemic risks. Nascent markets can be manipulated, and the way DeFi protocols are often interconnected creates potential contagion risks, one failure potentially cascading through the system.
Those are definitely significant challenges. Do the sources offer ways to tackle them?
They do. For peg volatility, the suggestion is moving towards more diversified infrastructure-backed reserves instead of just relying on traditional bank deposits or short-term debt. For regulatory fragmentation, the idea is to push for harmonized frameworks, maybe using the Genius Act as a kind of model globally. And for the quantum threat, post-quantum cryptography, PQC, integration, basically developing and implementing new encryption methods resistant to quantum attacks. Companies like BTQ are reportedly already working on this.
So developing quantum-resistant security for banking 2.0.
Exactly. Ensuring the infrastructure stays secure against future threats.
Okay. Dealing with the challenges then opens up this hypothetical ideal, this transformative potential. The sources paint a picture of a future infrastructure-backed global currency. Value derived not just from trust or treasuries, but from productive assets like renewable energy infrastructure, transportation networks, telecommunications systems that might even appreciate in value, unlike inflationary fiat.
It's a very compelling vision, isn't it? The sources definitely predict an explosion in stablecoin sector growth. They even touch on the potential for AI-powered stablecoin systems. Imagine smarter banking, more efficient risk management, automated compliance, and the broader impact could be huge. Enhanced financial inclusion for billions who are currently unbanked or underbanked. Major productivity gains from enabling tiny microtransactions efficiently. Democratizing global markets for small businesses everywhere.
That really does sound like a potential leap forward for the global economy.
It could be. But, you know, the long-term success hinges on getting both the tech and the regulation right. It needs continuous innovation, but also adaptive, coordinated rules to secure its future and make sure it actually serves the global economy responsibly. It's finding that balance.
So let's wrap this up. The core evidence we've looked at today. Stablecoins, tested for over a decade now, showing superior fraud resistance, superior efficiency compared to the old ways. Legislative action like the Genius Act is putting down regulatory tracks. Big players like JP Morgan, PayPal, they're not just dipping their toes in, they're building bridges, cementing this role. And the key takeaway seems to be that the economic logic here is just really strong. Stablecoins directly target the known weaknesses of traditional fiat inflation, centralization, friction, and the timeline. It seems to be speeding up. Our sources suggest institutional adoption hitting critical mass within 24-36 months, that's pretty soon, driven by that regulatory clarity and the clear economic benefits. We've seen how stablecoins offer this path towards maybe greater stability, efficiency, access, and finance. So as you move forward, here's something to think about. If money itself can evolve, right, from physical gold to trust in governments, and now to these cryptographically secured, asset-backed digital forms, what other fundamental parts of your life might be ready for a similar, maybe seemingly unimaginable transformation.